Hey, actually, in case you guys didn't hear the end of the interview, we might be switching Veronica to Linux, so silence. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks a lot.
She was awfully nice to you, Noah.
She humored you real well.
The last time you guys doubted my Linux switching abilities, it cost you your facial hair.
I agree. However,
if you switch Veronica Belmont to Linux, I'll shave all my body hair.
Yeah, there you go, dude. There you go. There's a bit of irony here. It's the 10th anniversary today of the iPhone as we record this episode of User Error, and it's also the day that System 76 announced Pop OS. You can find out more at system76.com/pop. They bill it as a powerful operating system just for creators. Beautiful, modern, and powerful. It's designed for people who use their computers to create. Right now, what it is a retheme of Ubuntu with some of their stuff pre-set up. Where it's going, though, could be dramatically different than that. They say the first release will be on October 19th, 2017. But right now, you can go get the Pop !_OS, or POS for short. You can get the alpha from their website at system76.com/pop.
It'd be nice if I could just get a PPA that has all this stuff in it.
Well, you could for a bit, and that's how we thought this was all going to be. We thought this was just going to be, like, the Pop stuff would just be a theme, right, Noah?
Right, just addition to what Ubuntu has already made. And even then, and I came out pretty strongly on this on Linux Unplugged, I did not think that that was a good direction to go. I didn't necessarily agree with the direction back then, and that was when it was just a theme. And now we're talking about a hardware company that is that is not only trying to do all of these really innovative and cool things in-house, now they're also going to take on the overhead of maintaining basically an entire operating system that they're going to, I guess, develop in-house?
I mean, you say that, but so far they haven't shown that they're going to do any development. All that's in their repos is, okay, admittedly, they forked GDM and changed some things so they could have their own custom theme. But other than that, it's all just theming stuff, which is why I don't understand why it can't just be a PPA.
Well, let's take all of this into context. If we back up a little bit, this is following kind of a week of the biggest successful hype campaign I've ever seen them launch, including masks and websites and videos, lots of resharing and engagement on social networking. Like, they really nailed this social marketing campaign.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was a really crappy marketing campaign. It got lots of hype, but then it had no follow-up. And on top of that, the whole idea is kind of, it felt like kind of a miss to me, because they're referencing the whole Guy Fawkes thing in July.
Well, okay. So, Well, I guess I would divorce the results, or what the payoff was, from the results. Like, I feel like they did good in engaging results on social networking. What the end result was $50 off some laptops, $100 off some desktops, and, by the way, a new OS. And that, I was like, whoa, okay, that is...
Well, I wouldn't even say that they did good in engaging people, because I feel like they just engaged the people that were already engaged. Like, I don't think they brought on a new group of people with this campaign. I think it was just people that were already interested in System 76.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough, but if that's probably who you're trying to rile up for this kind of stuff.
Well, I feel like that's not what you should be doing as a company.
No, I guess just to his point, if the people that are already, you know, ready to go, those people, I guess, don't need to be marketed to because they're already buying those products. And so it seems like the best use of resources would be to bring other people into this ecosystem. And in that respect, I think I agree with Rikai. I don't know that anything that's been done accomplishes that.
Before we get too far down the road, I'm going to give you a little spoiler. I think one of the biggest problems with this Pop OS announcement is that the whole marketing for it is pretty bad. Like, I think System 76 needs more people in their marketing staff, because I feel like the ones that they have just aren't doing well.
So let's talk about that for a second. If you are to see it, because who better, right? If there was going to be a hardware vendor that we wanted to develop a Linux distribution, I think we'd all agree that should probably be System 76. Whether or not we think it's a good idea for any hardware vendor to go, you know, on this path and essentially, you know, Bork Ubuntu. But if somebody was going to do it, I think System 76 would be the company. But I agree. I'm not sure that I think that the way that it's marketed, the way it's presented, there's, you know, how shall I say, a lot of smoke, no fire.
I feel like the idea that they're going with could be a good thing. I think they announced it way too early.
So I want to play devil's advocate here for just a second, and I want to paint a picture, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but let's just consider their perspective for a moment. Let's consider System 76's perspective, and here's the reality. I feel like for a hardware vendor in 2017, the average Joe that needs a PC is not the same average Joe that it was 11 years ago when System 76 started.
True.
I know I make this example sometimes too many times, but it to me, it's really telling that so my fiance Hadia doesn't need a computer at home. Doesn't mean she's not connected, and she still manages her small business. But not just her, but her three employees who are also, you know, around her age, also do not have computers at home. They are three successful, engaged, like very active individuals that do not have computers at home because they just need something to do: email, check news, respond to certain things, manage photos. They do it all on their phones and in one case a Chromebook. So if you need just general compute these days, you don't need to go buy a Bonobo.
True.
So the market of people who need computers like System 76 makes are the kind of people that are creating apps for those devices, or they're working scientific workloads, or they're in education and they want to work on open standards and open software, or they're developing web apps, or they're developing software, or they're working in some sort of makerspace. And these are the people that are buying computers.
That's from system administrators.
Yeah, sure, totally. These are the people that I would consider them making and creating stuff for the devices. These people are buying System 76 machines, and there is not a perfect solution for that niche right now.
Okay, can I interrupt you for a second? If they're going to market to that niche, then why are they announcing an OS that does nothing so far but theme Ubuntu?
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. Right now, today, it just seems to be a badly named wallpaper respin.
Exactly.
But there is inferences in what they've been talking about throughout different. I've been following, and I know you have too. I've been following this story very closely today because it just came out today, and in different. I've been watching their responses in all the different platforms, and one of the things that they seem to be indicating is they would be willing to diverge. Now, nothing's set in stone, but they would be willing to diverge quite significantly from the Ubuntu release cycle. They say that traditionally they have found sometimes for hardware enablement purposes or bug fixes for customer support within their own customer base that they've had to early ship software sometimes to or ship a new version than what ships in stock Ubuntu to fix something. So they feel like it might be possible that they could have a different release cadence. There is certain things they feel like they could address in here, like making it super easy to have a build environment ready to go or super easy to have, I don't know. They talked about a few pre-ready to go like workloads.
Yeah, but to that point, I talked to Ryan, as you know, and he told me...
Ryan Sipes from System 76.
Yes, correct. He told me that, you know, they do that stuff, but Ubuntu will do that with their partners. And Ryan has said that they're a Canonical partner, so...
I don't know if they're a partner or if they just have some agreements.
Ryan explicitly said that they are a Canonical partner.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Oh.
And so I don't see why they don't just go that route, because... As far as I know, Dell does that with Ubuntu, don't they?
Yeah, that would be an example of like the high DPI stuff that they fixed. That the System 76 kind of had some fun fixing. The reality was that the OEM version had been fixed. And I don't know how far they'll deviate from that. And I feel like this is if I were okay. Now I'm gonna switch gears. So that was my devil's advocate. There's a market need. They need to have a product differentiator. If you could make a distribution that was great for that niche customer, it could be awesome. Now, here's why I feel like this could also be the beginning of the end for System 76 if they blow this thing. The announcement today went over like a fart in church. Lots of criticism, lots of issues. Everybody's throwing in with what their perfect distro would have, and like like just perfect traditional Linux community style. They are an entire range, many of which conflict with each other on what people would consider make the perfect Linux distribution. So that has this has been one of those things where System 76 is having to kind of backtrack on a few areas. They're participating as much as they can in social media, but it has not been well received by the Linux community because this whole reproduction of effort is a meme that comes up in every single conversation. Why are you doing this? If you could, if you can boil down everybody's response to one word, it would be why. Why are you doing this? The community does not understand. And I have to tell you something.
Well, and to that end.
Go ahead. I can wait. I got plenty more to say. So go ahead.
Well, I guess so. I come at this, I feel like I approach open source and the community a lot the same way that System 76 does, right? Because I have built my business model on the, on essentially, for lack of a better phrase, on the backs of other people that have provided me with, with open source software solutions. And then we sell, in their case, they're selling the hardware to supplement it. I'm selling the support and implementation of it. But the basic model is the same. And one of the things that I have come up time and time again is there are things that, yes, I don't always agree with the way that software, that the way that the software works. And there are plenty of times that I have thought, well, if we just did this ourselves, we could do this, that, and the other. But there are two problems with that. One is, you have to understand that you are maintaining then the overhead of, and like you said, reproducing all of that work. But the other thing is, I feel like in a lot of ways, it fundamentally goes against the very nature of open source because, forking is good when we're going to get two competitive products. But this is not the time to create another competitive product. And as already discussed, at the moment anyway, from the changes that we're seeing, they're not differentiating enough to make a competitive product to Ubuntu. It's just, like you said, basically a different theme, a different background.
It's actually dangerous, I think, if it's not done right for System 76. And the reason I say this is, first of all, if they're going to go this far, then they probably have to go as far as stripping all Ubuntu branding from the system, including package names, comments, everywhere. I mean, they're going to have to go all the way if they do this. So that may end up forcing them to have to run their own repo to be real about it. And then the other thing, though, is you are losing out on a massive brand name. People are likely buying System 76 computers in part because there is some recognition of the Ubuntu brand at this point.
Yeah, and the general consciousness.
And so here's the bottom line. Not only is this going to increase fragmentation from like different desktop standpoints and Ubuntu derivatives, but this is going to create fragmentation within System 76's own customer base, full stop, no question, no dispute about it, because some of their customers undoubtedly have to run stock Ubuntu for their job. It's likely why they are System 76 customers in the first place. So people like Amazon and Tesla, what's the other company that they were citing today?
Google.
These companies are not going to buy some computer with a no-name operating system on it, even if it's a derivative of Ubuntu. It's not going to happen, especially if it doesn't have Ubuntu in the name. If this was something that would work and sell, Dell would have already been doing it. They have a huge development base inside their own company. They're people that like end users, like engineers, like web developers, and people that have development setups that where they want to match production with what's on their laptop. They're gonna need and want and require Ubuntu proper. End of the day, that's what they're gonna want. And why not if they're both a GNOME 3 desktop anyways? So it's going to be a full showstopper for some folks, because the whole reason you're buying this computer is because it comes preloaded with Ubuntu. That customer base is now going to have to reassess, so they really have to nail Pop! OS for them. And then you're going to unquestionably have companies that just refuse to buy anything that doesn't have Ubuntu on it. If you've standardized on Windows 10, Chrome OS, and Ubuntu, and all of a sudden something named Pop! OS comes along, even if your IT people know it's based on Ubuntu, that switch is not going to happen. That policy is not going to change. So it could be a liability unless it gets pretty good traction.
That's going to be difficult to do in 2017.
You touched on another thing that doesn't make sense to me. You said that they're both also going to be GNOME-based distros. When talking to Ryan, he kind of implied that one of the reasons they decided to do this was that they weren't happy waiting on
What he said was, we waited 3 years on Canonical to deliver features we were promised, and then at the end of it, they killed Unity. That's what he said, yeah.
So they're unhappy with the rate of Canonical's change, but at the same time, they're going to base their new distro on one of Canonical's biggest changes ever?
You know, and it's funny you bring that up, because that was what I was talking about, and I mentioned this to you in a telegram earlier today, is if we just take for a moment, if they really, because I don't agree with their assessment that Canonical doesn't care about the desktop. That's not the message that's not the message that I took from everything that I've seen publicly.
Do agree with that.
And then, well, that's fine. You're welcome to. And then behind the scenes, talking to some of the people, that's not the impression I've gotten at all. But if you take that as the premise, if we accept the premise that, which I don't, but if we accept the premise that Canonical is no longer cares about the desktop, that's not their focus anymore. We're just going to do servers and we'll just discontinue the desktop, or somebody else wants to do it, whatever, but it's just going to die a slow death somewhere. If we accept that, then you have way bigger problems than fixing the theme. You better be prepared to maintain an entire distribution, because they're going to rebase, right? Because that distro, Ubuntu, then the future of Ubuntu is going to be a headless server distro. It's not meant for the desktop anymore, and so it may not work with graphical components and all of that stuff, and you better be ready for that down the road. And then there's so many things that don't make sense about this to me personally.
Well, not only that, but the fact that they are going to go and use GNOME kind of speaks to how much extra work they're willing to take on, because if they really didn't like that decision, they could just as easily continue to maintain or update Unity.
Well, so GNOME Shell's pretty easily customizable. I mean, the red flag on the field, obviously, right now, is the fact that they've had to fork GNOME Shell, which already seems like we're getting into nightmare territory, and they're doing it for theme purposes, but we'll see where that goes, obviously. Here's, I think, Carl's take on it. I think Carl, the CEO of System 76, looks at this as, we essentially are building a distro already in-house. We're just assembling Ubuntu for our machines for the installation purposes. So we've already kind of got the tooling. Noah and I have seen some of it, so I know they do have it. They already fix stuff that's broken in stock Ubuntu, so that way their customers don't have an issue. They've often just put the fixes in the PPA or included in the pre-installed image. So this is not unusual work for them to be making customizations and making tweaks. They already take responsibility on for that. And I think what their perspective is our expertise, our field of expertise is the last mile of the user experience. I think that's how they put it. It's that last mile. Shipping hardware and having high quality standards, keeping up with support. And they feel like, well, we're just going to shift the work that we've been putting into our PPA and the Ubuntu base and all of that and just move it into something we call Pop! OS, which rides on top of all of that. And in their world, what's the big upset about? Because you still get access to all of the repos. You can still run all of your snaps and your flat packs and your app packages and your dev packages, and everything's going to be just fine.
Because if everyone in open source did that, if everyone else took that approach, we would have a bunch of different spin-offs that all did a couple things very, very well. And the whole idea behind open source is System 76 needs, you know, whatever, high DPI support on their laptop so that they can go fix it. And that way, when Dell goes to do it, then Dell has high DPI. And when Dell needs to fix, you know, whatever, and we all kind of share and give back to this Canonical place. Like, that's the whole point of open source. And so I fundamentally disagree and really, really struggle to even understand how I get that people want brand differentiators, but I don't think you can have a brand differentiator and sell yourself on the virtues of open source technology. Mm-hmm. I just don't think the two go mm-hmm. hand in hand.
Yeah. I think the best brand differentiator, easy for me to say, would have been, we sell the best out of the box Ubuntu experience.
Well, but then think of this in another way. You have System 76, who now is working on sales. They're working on manufacturing, and now they're also working on maintaining a distro.
And support and all the other things you have with the business.
And they're admittedly, by their own admission, a small company. Large companies have trouble doing that. How are they going to be able to do this without fucking something up somewhere?
Well, I think the launch was a little botched in some ways.
Yeah.
I saw their own their own people saying they were surprised by the reaction, which that surprises me. That was the most surprising thing out of all of this, yeah, was that they were surprised by the reaction.
I'm a dude sitting here on my couch, and I saw that reaction coming.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the other big surprise, if you think about this a little differently, imagine if they had announced that they were going to launch a line, not replace all of their machines, but they were going to launch a line of System 76 laptops preloaded with elementary OS.
That would have been a better choice than starting an entire new distro.
Well, yes, no, even if they launched a line with their own distro, that would have been better because they would have been showing us something instead of giving us, oh, here's what our distro is going to be in 6 to 12 months.
I wonder if they won't walk this back and let you choose. I wonder if that won't be one of the compromises that comes out. And then, of course, it's, oh, we were planning this all along.
See, but even that would have been a reasonable thing. If they said, we offer these computers, they are optimized for Ubuntu. By the way, in-house, we have this distro that we're kind of monkeying around with. And this is what we choose to run. So if you want, we'll throw it on the machine for you. If you offered it as just an option, I think that would be a perfectly reasonable approach. To whole hog jump off of the software company that gave you the name to begin with, I think is a huge mistake. And I said that, like you said, back when they were just talking about theming it differently.
I think it betrays the underlying motivation here. I don't know, but to my eye, what seems to have happened, and we were really in the thick of it, is sort of saw it all happen around us. When Canonical announced the end of life of Unity, I think metaphorically something snapped for the System 76 team. I think they probably had a couple of devices in the cooker. They heavily had implied to us multiple times that they maybe had a mobile project that was probably Unity 8 reliant. I think they had been salivating for new features. There was likely a perception that the lack of progress on the Ubuntu desktop was retarding sales to a degree, and so there was some bitterness about that. And so them, the solution wasn't just a hard cut of Unity. And when that came, I think they had this collective, well, what the hell did we wait three years for? What were we sitting around for? We could have been just doing all this work ourselves and getting it out the door for our customers, and who knows our customers better than us? And so that snap happened, and now they're pissed. And that's why there's a little bit of anti-Ubuntu Canonical messaging in the way that they're communicating some of this stuff. And I think that's why, at least as of right now, it's a hard switch. This is our new distro. Or a new OS. Don't call it a distro. It's an OS. I wonder if they would have shipped elementary OS and, say, paired it up with the Galago Pro, if there wouldn't have been a really warm reaction to that in the community, where they could have started experimenting with shipping different distributions and learning more about that and sort of prepping themselves for this. Because that could have been a totally different message. Really high-class, well-designed distribution paired up with well-designed, high-class hardware. That is an obvious win. No-name distribution launched by a hardware company doesn't land as well. It reeks of 2007 a little bit, and I think that's why it hasn't played well. We are now in an era where it's either you're Ubuntu or you really got to be something special and different. And that's why you see OpenSUSE going all in with their entire ecosystem around the build service and the QA system and Tumbleweed and Leap. And you see Fedora going all in with all of their initiatives. And you see projects like Solus and Elementary OS carrying more prestige than they ever have, because these distributions are truly doing something different. And if you either have to do something different or you better have Ubuntu in your name.
It kind of makes me wonder if, did they try talking to other distributions that they could partner with, like some of the smaller ones, like Solus or Elementary OS?
The distribution makers that I've asked, which is a handful of them, more than a few, have said no.
And that kind of strikes me as strange, that the first thought to them then was to jump to, let's make our own OS, rather than trying to partner with a distribution that might be more accepting than Ubuntu, like Solus or Elementary.
So okay, I got a question for Brown Bear. So let's just change our mindset about this whole thing. Let's pretend like for a moment that it's a divorce. Mommy and Daddy are going their separate ways, and this is just now the new reality. What do we do? Do we try to throw in and get involved at the early days with the community and give them suggestions and start working it, because they seem committed to it? And the dream isn't necessarily wrong. So if a company wants to spend money and resources on trying to make it happen, do you think, Noah, as a community, that we should just say, okay, well, these are our concerns, but if you're going to give it a go, we're there, we're going to try to make it work?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was just looking at where I can download it and where I can play it. You better believe I'll have it on my laptop. And truth be told, if it's a better experience than stock Ubuntu, yeah, I'll switch to it. Why not? I trust the people at System 76. I like the idea of a company that is focused on that has been making desktops for the last 10 years, and now they're going to focus on making a desktop distribution specifically tailored towards the desktop. I like all of that in theory. I'm sure you do too. I think we all agree in theory it's a great idea. I just question if ultimately it's going to be successful because of the enormous market realities that they're up against, and the level of success that companies with more money and have spent more effort and more time have tried similar things. You know, Canonical at one time was a very dedicated company into producing, you know, the ultimate Linux desktop. And so, yes, I think we should absolutely get behind it. I think we should definitely try, you know, and support them and see how far it gets. I think we should, you know, do reviews, all that stuff that we usually, that way, like we do with any other Linux distribution out there. It's very frustrating because I think that a lot of us really hold System 76 in a high standard, and this decision seems to be a poor one. And I think that's what frustrates a lot
of us. They're definitely cashing a lot of goodwill checks today. And I'm not saying that they're going bankrupt. I'm just saying they're cashing a lot of goodwill checks, and people are going to be really, really watching to see how this turns out. And if you think about how they're talking about this, they seem to me to be talking about making an OS for creators, period. Not just an OS for System 76 machines. I know you're planning to maybe get involved in a conversation with Ryan like next week, Beard?
Next Thursday at 10 a.m., I think.
One of the questions I would like to ask Ryan, I would like to know, is this a OS that is intended for all x86 machines? Because that's the way it seems to be positioned at system76.com/pop and in their press release that they shared with me. It seems obvious that it would be custom tailored for hardware built by them, but it to me reads as a full-fledged desktop OS that they think they would be happy if the entire community adopted.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fascinating thing that they've just, I mean, woo, that I can, I'm going to be thinking about this for weeks. I'll be thinking about this for weeks because this is a huge move by System 76. They are becoming an OS vendor, not just a distro maker for their hardware, but they intend for this to be something that could have features that are maybe more Chrome OS. Like I've seen, like on the, they have a subreddit set up, and in the want thread, like Ryan Sipe suggested, what about a power wash feature? What about adding this in here? Like they're considering adding stuff that could make it stand out and different. And they are considering release cadences that are different. Maybe they'll do like certain hardware enablements that are different.
Kind of jumping to the other side, what would be wrong with submitting a power wash feature upstream to Ubuntu or to the GNOME team? Why? That's I think, where my failure to connect some of these things are, is what would be wrong with taking all of these legitimately really great ideas that they have? Why not submit those upstream so that we can all benefit from it?
If I was going to just kind of take what I've seen them respond to today and give you a response, I would say that their take is, well, we are going to upstream it, but we're just going to ship it too. And if they want to upstream it, they can have at it, and that's better for the whole community, but we're sick of waiting, so we're going to develop it, we're going to ship it, and then we'll ship the code upstream, and if they want to take it, they can have it.
We're going to go it alone. That sounds like a great plan.
Look at how long we had desktop, you know, environment fragmentation, and all of a sudden that's kind of sort of coming to a standardization around GNOME?
That's funny.
But it's not now.
I disagree. I think it is.
I think it's 10 times as worse. First, you've still got all the desktop fragmentation, but now, like with Ubuntu, you're fragmenting individual desktop environments.
Yeah, well, now we've got Budgie, we've got Cinnamon,
Even inside of GNOME, System 76 is forking GNOME shell.
Okay, I think it really matters. I think the outside it looks like a fucking clown show. I think people look at this and I've already seen in a couple of like more like you know, non-Linux user places that are covering this. It's like, oh, look at the fucking Linux retards again, once again spinning their wheels. Here's what they say: they don't even have AutoCAD, they don't even have proper this, they don't even have XYZ.
Let them go back to playing with their GIMP.
But yet they have another fucking desktop distribution. Like the people are are really cynical about it.
I mean, so here's, I guess, what I was getting at. Take any business under, let's say, 500,000 employees, and now how many desktops do we have left? We have GNOME and maybe KDE?
Yeah, right.
Maybe. But I mean, yeah, for reality, depends, like, yeah. If yeah. reality is you go into, well, and Unity, I guess, still left over, but they're going to go to GNOME too. But like, you go into Amazon, you go into Google, you go into Red Hat, they're all on GNOME. They're on Unity or they're on GNOME. And if they're on Unity, they're on their way to GNOME. So, you know, for what it matters, for where the money is, we're on one desktop.
Right. So you think they're going to run Pop OS?
No, they're not going to run Pop OS. And that's my point.
Exactly. System 76 has marginalized themselves further.
Yeah, they're more marginalized now. System 76 would probably be better off launching a specialized consulting service to load Ubuntu or CentOS or Red Hat or whatever people want, because the reality is,
well,
it's not going to be Pop OS.
What I found interesting about their statement too was they said that they're gonna create a distro for creators, and then they subtitled it with like DevOps and developers and stuff. Isn't that just Fedora Workstation or Red Hat Enterprise Linux
or Ubuntu GNOME?
Yeah, like. All the developers are already happy with the OSs they have.
You know what this feels like? This feels like when Canonical announced a mobile phone effort and we all sat around and went, what the hell are they doing? This is never going to work. Why are they doing this? They can't beat Android. You can't beat Android. It feels like we're now having that conversation about System 76.
Well, the interesting thing about that is apparently, potentially, System 76 was considering making a System 76 phone, but now we'll never see that because apparently Ubuntu canceled that and they can't continue it on their own.
That's what Ryan said, yeah. We'll see. They can still do it.
Yeah, by not ditching Unity.
I guess I'll say this much. I think that this has a better chance of succeeding than Ubuntu Canonical selling a mobile phone did.
No.
I'll say that.
You're
wrong. I think so. No, I disagree. Because here's the thing, all this, and here's why I say that, because Chris is 100% right. There are some places that just, they require Ubuntu, and so when you look for a company, when you're going to buy a computer because you have to run Ubuntu, the thing that rises to the top of the list is System 76 because of their branding, and they essentially just threw that away. But aside from that, there is a measurable portion of people that, like the schools and stuff that are doing scientific stuff, as long as it's based on Ubuntu, it'll work. And the reason I know that it's going to work is because I do the same thing with CentOS all the time. I go into businesses and say, well, this is what RHEL is, but CentOS is binarily compatible. It's basically the same thing. And we can any software that would work on Red Hat will work on this. And I've yet to, with one exception, and they had grant money, with one exception, they don't care. So in that respect, I think it'll be successful. And I don't know where the market was going to be for an Ubuntu phone.
Yeah, well, and that actually, and if you think about it, I think what probably backs up your point is that's why Red Hat is losing so much money and going out of business.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. They have $3 billion. But,
but my profit, point but... is, yeah, I know people are using CentOS and Scientific Linux, well, but Red Hat is also still making a lot of money.
Not only that, but it took a long time for CentOS to build up enough brand recognition to even be taken seriously.
LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Thank you, Linux Academy, for sponsoring the User Air program, but more than that, thank you, Linux Academy, for making humanity a better place. Through your wise teachings, more of us are using Linux than ever, and we're deploying open source software where that horrible data-destroying Windows would have been in the past. Hallelujah, Linux Academy! With learning paths, instructor mentoring, course schedulers, practice exams, flashcards, forked by the Jupyter Broadcasting community, cloud servers that spin up on demand, self-paced in-depth video courses, and human beings that can answer your questions, instructors, full-time humans that are there to help you are available. Check it out at linuxacademy.com/unplugged. And here's the other nice thing. I know some of you have some extra time in the summer right now. This is a great opportunity to deep dive, because if you go to linuxacademy.com/unplugged, you get the free 7-day trial. Isn't that great? I told you there's a great thing. linuxacademy.com/unplugged. And if you're busy, maybe you got a few kids, boy, do I know that one. They have a great availability scheduler that helps you plan something you can actually stick to, and they work with you. It's really a cool system. linuxacademy.com/unplugged. Thanks to Linux Academy for sponsoring User Air. Well, Rikai is now the official Twitch correspondent of User Air, not only because he's streaming like a machine these days, but he's always been kind of watching that space pretty closely.
Yeah, and I think Amazon just ruined Twitch.
What? That is... I'm going to just... Okay, there go my notes. That's not what I expected we were talking about. Let's get into this.
So Amazon I think yesterday, no, Friday? Yeah, Friday, they announced that, well, a while ago they announced that they were adding an affiliate program, which I've been trying to become a part of. But yesterday they announced that affiliates are getting a sub button, which is kind of a bad thing because the margin or the level of entry for affiliates is kind of very low. Like, you need to have an average of 3 viewers for a week, and you can become a partner.
And when you say a sub button, is it a monetary subscription?
Yeah.
Oh. So it's not like YouTube subscription. It's like a, you get, I don't like it when they mix up that vernac.
Yeah. Well, so partners have had sub buttons for a long time, and you actually have to have pretty high stats to become a partner. And one of the way that they had initially pitched affiliates was it's a stepping stone to becoming a partner. But most of the things that partners have, affiliates are now getting. Like, they're getting sub buttons, they're getting emotes, and so it kind of disincentivizes affiliates from working hard to become a partner.
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, I just kind of feel like they're kind of killing their own platform in an attempt to get more money, because affiliates also get less.
Because they get a cut.
Yeah. Well, they get a cut with both affiliates and partners, but it's, from what I've heard, a 50-50 split with affiliates, whereas with partners it was like 70-30 or 75-25. And there's a worry that people are going to stream enough to get affiliates and then just get their free emote and then just not stream for like a year.
Man, I tell you,
because the emotes are actually what a lot of people want. Because you can, if you have an emote, you can use it in anybody's chat.
Oh, that's, wow. What a system. Boy, you know, Noah, if there's anything that makes me feel like an old man, it's Twitch. It really makes me feel like I'm out of touch.
Yeah, I have no idea what he's talking about.
No, I didn't know any of this stuff. An emote sounds like a stupid fucking thing to me. But now all of a sudden I want one. If I can use it across all the chats, now I want it all of a sudden. I'm not even kidding. Like, I'm like, shit, I want that.
Well, it's also kind of a way of to do cross advertising on the Twitch platform. And some people get really pissed off about you using emotes in other chats because it seems like a form of advertising.
Wow. Wow. Oh, my God. I got to get off the internet, dude. I got to get off the internet. So, you're still streaming, though?
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, I'm used to going down with sinking ships.
Hey! Where do they find you?
Twitch.tv/RekaiOP, or probably by the time this is done recording, you can just go to rekd.net, R-E-K-D.net, and it'll just forward you to there.
This is why I got to go to Montana. This is why I got to go to Montana.
Because I want to be a streamer?
Because if this is how money is made on the internet in the future, I'm out. I can't. I'm out.
I feel like you'd love it.
Really?
You just sit down, you stream for a couple hours.
Yeah.
You don't have to do any editing, recording.
Just have to get your emotes, Chris.
And then you just go home.
I know. It boggles my mind. And
it's way lower effort than this podcasting bullshit.
It's so much less effort. It really is something. It is a remarkable thing that people make a living doing that. And I can't wrap my head around it. And that is the point at which I go, oh, okay, so this is the thing that came along that is that makes me feel like an old person. It's beyond my comprehension. Like, I've even tuned into it a bit. I'm like, you know, to be honest, I kind of would have to be a little screwed up to watch it. Like, I'd either have to be intensely interested in the game, or I'd have to be a little inebriated to want to watch somebody stream for hours.
I don't stream to watch specific games. I stream to watch people. Personalities that I find that I like, and I just enjoy hanging out and talking with them and stuff, so I hang out there and talk with them. It doesn't really matter what they're doing, and it's that way for like a lot of people.
Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. We've got a new secret podcast for our patrons, which you can subscribe. We're using the new Patreon RSS feed and all of it. It's like a behind-the-scenes show. No, I know. It's even more behind-the-scenes than this, like answering questions and stuff.
It's so behind-the-scenes, I didn't even know about it.
I know. It was even a sneaky edit. And it's not a regular thing. It's like when there's something to talk about, I'm posting it, and that's why we're using the RSS features. you can become a supporter of the network and get access to the Secret Sneaky Show. Patreon.com/JupiterSignal.
Saying it was a stressful week would be the understatement of the year.
What's going on over there?
Well, it turns out, you've heard of Hyper-V.
Oh, yeah.
So, turns out, if you have a Hyper-V instance and the disk image is stored on a completely separate storage array, and the drive where the Hyper-V instance is running crashes, it completely and unrecoverably corrupts the Hyper-V disk image. Which does not happen in VMware, does not happen in Xen, does not happen in libvirtd. That only happens in a product make.
Can I ask? So you have the Hyper-V server has like its like C drive stored on a different disk array, and then that disk array had a malfunction.
No, like the Hyper-V, like the software, the application, the executable is on C, and let's say like the drives, like the virtual drives for the guests, are in like D, and if drive C crashes. And the VM is running at the time, apparently it destroys the VM to the point that not even Microsoft can recover any of the data off of these images.
So you can reload Windows, you can you can get a new Hyper-V installation going,
yes.
You rebuild the VM, you go to connect it to the disk, and oh, go fuck yourself, the data's corrupted.
And what's frustrating about that is, like, I understand that, you know, if it's in running mode, there might be some sort of cleanup thing, or maybe you need to cleanly shut down the disk, or I would understand that there are some things, but I have used VMware, I have used Xen, I've obviously heavily used libvirtd. No other virtualization infrastructure, not even VirtualBox, has that kind of catastrophic failure when, you know, upon the loss of the and just to have to process that and then add to insult to injury, because Microsoft Windows is such a pile of crap, the backup utility built into Windows that takes a backup and then writes it to another drive, apparently that cannot be recovered under certain circumstances if depending on what state the backup was in at the time it crashes. It's such an unbelievable mess. It honestly shocked me. And here's the thing. I only needed this thing to work for like another 6 more months, and I would have had it off of Windows to begin with. So it blows my mind that I cannot rely on Windows infrastructure to run for 6 freaking months. And granted, the start of this was a hardware failure, which is not Windows' fault, and I'd be the first to admit that. But all of the problems after that hardware failure are entirely a Windows-specific thing, and it makes me so mad to know that if this had been ZFS, or this had been X4, or this had been XFS, none of this would have been a problem.
Can I ask you sure. questions without sure. triggering you?
Sure. Well, I don't know. I'm pretty triggered already.
So is the file system on this array, is it accessible? Like, so the D drive, like, you can still browse the file system and see all the files?
Oh, yeah. The storage partition drive, the storage array is perfectly fine. Nothing wrong with it whatsoever.
Wow. It's just simply the VMs were improperly disconnected from their disk images, and so now go screw yourself.
Yes, and here's
what about like volume shadow copy? Like, can you revert back or anything like that?
No, and I mean, I spent 6 hours on the phone with Microsoft, and they were, you know, trying to work with me on this too. And the whole thing is just a mess. So their
recommendation is you have a backup of the data that was stored in the VM images.
Right, which we did. We had a backup of it. But apparently if the backup process is interrupted, not only does it take out the most recent, you know, Delta, the backup, it takes out the entire backup. I can't even go to the day before, the week before, the month before. Like, all the data is gone. I mean, it's not gone because it's now sitting at a data recovery center, and they're going to pay thousands of dollars to get this data back. If the data center can do it. And here's the other thing. And this is, okay, so that's Microsoft rant. Aside from that, I had a RAID 5 failure with 2 drives. And like my entire IT career, I have always been told in RAID 5, if you have 2 disks, that's it. You're done. Like there is, don't even try, just don't do it. And I'll have to find the name of the company, but there is a company that claims that they have a 98% success rate at recovering data off of a RAID 5 failure with 2 drives. So it's going to be interesting to see if they are actually able to successfully get data off of that.
Jeez, that's 2 pretty probably pissed off clients, I imagine.
They're kind of upset.
Jeez,
but
sucks.
I mean, the reality is, like, and like I was explaining it to the one with the hard drive failures, they asked me, they're like, well, how do we make sure this never happens again? I'm like, you don't. You know, a hardware failure is a hardware failure, and hard drives, the only thing I can tell you about them is they will die. So I guess replace them every 2 years, and you're substantially lessen the chance that you're going to suffer, you know, a failure, but it's going to die. And I mean, in that case, we had, you know, there was, you know, replication and stuff. You know, on Linux, it's not an issue. It's just, I just have a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that there are large installations of this stuff and like people aren't being driven nuts. And it's funny because I've reached out to some of the people in the audience that deal a lot with Windows and I've gotten their take on it. And their answer, basically everyone's answer is, oh, yeah, yeah, we just kind of accept a lot of that stuff happens. And our answer is just basically we just keep offline backups of everything. And then
you build around it.
Yeah, you build around it. We accept the fact that the center core.
Yeah, when you run a Windows infrastructure, you become pretty familiar with what the limitations are and what like tools really suck, and so you just start building these crazy workarounds that are just part of the process.
And so in comparing that to when my home server failed, and granted that wasn't, you know, that was just a single drive died, but comparing that on ZFS, I literally pulled the drive out, I put a new one in, and I clicked a button in the web UI, and 7 hours later everything was fine. And in fact, I wouldn't have even known there was something wrong. Because when Hyper-V dies, or when Hyper-V detects an abnormality in the drive that it can't access, obviously, you know, it goes offline, it gives you a message. When ZFS, when that drive died, I didn't even know that it died. Like, I just logged into the web UI to change something, and I noticed a little flashing yellow thing, and I click on it. It's like, by the way, one of your disks died, and I'm like, oh, really? That seems serious. And then I'm frantically on IRC with Alan. I'm like, what do I do? What do I do? And he's like, just put a drive in, click a button.
But of course, what you're dealing with isn't really precisely a file system corruption so much as it is a image file corruption based on a hardware failure.
Yes,
so
the correct.
Hyper-V Hyper-V doesn't really sound like it's super, super prepared for an eventuality like that, where maybe the VMDK file format might be more I don't know. I'm just speculating. It sounds like it was a series of failures.
Yeah. And to be fair, in Microsoft's defense, they claim that this is not normal, that this is somewhat of an abnormality. But the bottom line is I'm here, like this has happened. And here's the other thing, too. I've talked to other people. There was the guy that we interviewed for the school district. They manage a huge infrastructure. And their answer is they actually don't put Windows on the metal anymore. They run it in all of their Windows stuff is in VMs, and then they back up the VM disks. So anytime it's in VMware in their case, and anytime they have a window, like you said, it's an eventuality that something fails. They just disconnect the Windows VM, copy the image back over, reconnect it, and everything's good to go. Which is now how this client is set up.
Have you used that tool that takes a Windows machine and converts it into a VM?
Yes,
I
have.
What's that called?
Oh, it is so great. It is called, I actually have it on my laptop here because I was using it.
While he's looking it up, I'll tell you what it does is you run it on a physical Windows box. Say it's your Exchange server that has some hardware that's starting to flake out, or a SQL server that's on a box that's 10 years old and you want to move it somewhere else for a little bit while you transition away. You can run this Microsoft created tool and it will convert the entire Windows installation into a virtual machine. You remember what it's called now? No, did you find it?
Disk to VHD, and it is a tool put out by, like you said, by Microsoft. You can download it right from Microsoft's site for free, and it is slick. And then there's a command. Maybe we'll throw this command in the show notes too. The command will let you take the VHXD image that this tool spits out and convert it to a QCOW2 file, so you can run that in VMware. You can run it in Xen. You can run it in libvirt. I think even VirtualBox supports it in read only mode.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going with.
You know, I kind of did the opposite with VirtualBox, where I installed a copy of Windows to a raw disk in VirtualBox.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I later switched my top boot priority to that disk and just booted it like it was a normal machine.
Yeah, so you could run it as a VM or as a hardware.
Yeah.
I did that. I've done that once, and that was actually really cool. But the problem I ran into is after like the third time I did it, it triggered the Windows activation thing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I didn't run into that problem.
That was a neat thing because like I could use the whole machine in a VM. I could run all of the applications I wanted. But when I wanted that native performance, I just rebooted into it. That was actually slick.
That's one of the ways I ran on Linux for a long time, because occasionally I did need a Windows app, but I didn't have to boot into Windows. I just booted up the VM and ran it. But then when I wanted a game, I did boot into Windows.
there is actually a way that you can, at least in Libert D, there is a way that you can copy the like all of the machine specifics, like the UUID for the motherboard that it reports, and the NIC and the MAC address and all that stuff, and you can copy that out so that if you ever have to rebuild a like I do this all the time for the Windows machines, we always copy that machine profile out so that if you ever have to rebuild the machine, then you can just import the disk and it doesn't do all the activation stuff, because if it detects a certain number of hardware changes, that's what triggers it. So, and you can preserve that stuff, which is kind of cool.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to be converting a server, though. You could just be a home user who's been running Windows for a long time and you want to switch to Linux. You could run this on your Windows rig as like a final backup solution. And then once you get on Linux, you could spin it up as a VM.
Okay, here,
still
let's
have
one
access
up that.
To all that stuff. It could be an easy way to transition.
Let's one up that a little bit more. You could even then take that onto something like Unraid, or, and Libvirt D supports this too, PCI pass through it, plug a separate USB keyboard, mouse, and a separate display into it, and you could turn your was physical device Windows install into a virtual Windows install that supports PCI pass through, so you still get the performance of a physical install, if you want to take it to crazy level. Yeah.
Jeez, that would be a great project. I like that idea. That's a really good idea. And just have an extra monitor, mouse, and keyboard on your desk, and they're all wired into one machine. Woo! Yeah.
So here's a question, Noah, relating to those failures. Would having used a ZFS-based server to store those files have prevented that issue?
I don't know, because my understanding is the failure in this particular case is Hyper-V's inability to deal with a disconnected disk. But I don't know that ZFS would have failed the same way, so maybe. The real answer, though, is that...
Well, what I was thinking is you wouldn't have run into the corrupted image issue in the first place because you could have just rolled back that file.
Well, I would have. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's right. I could have. Yeah, that's true. With ZFS. The other thing is, and maybe if you have enough drives fail, I know if you have enough drives fail, this will not be the case. But in my experience, ZFS is pretty resilient with drive failures. Like, it gives you enough leeway.
Yeah, depending on how you set it up. Yeah.
Yeah. To go back and say, okay, something is going wrong, do something about it before it really fails. And the other thing too is, I have looked at, and you know, we talked about this, is my understanding is that SSDs, it's very unheard of for an SSD to fail into catastrophically. They usually will fail to a read-only state.
Yep.
And so that might be a really good, because it's really great for VMs anyway to have them sitting on SSDs. That might be a way to go in the future. In fact, I was looking the PERC controller on this particular server. You know, it's really frustrating because the PERC controller will not let you do ZFS because there's no way to pass the SAS drives directly through to the motherboard. So you always, and the best you can do is you could put like 12 drives in the thing and each one could be its own RAID 0. But that's a dangerous thing to do on ZFS because you're almost, ZFS expects to be able to talk to the drive directly. So you're basically stuck using the controller if you have that.
Or a SAS to SATA sled.
So you can put SATA drives in a SAS slot. That's no problem. But the controller that sits on the back plane is that PERC controller has no pass-through ability. So you'd have to somehow take that out. You know, after a week of crappy Windows servers not working and not even able to store data on a hard drive, I had to get a server up and running at a client last week, and of course my go-to place was DigitalOcean.com. So I went to DigitalOcean and I was able to get the infrastructure spun up in just a couple of minutes. And let me tell you, the look on someone's face when you can just sit down in their conference room and you're like, hey, guess what? You know, we had this huge server crash. Yeah, it's going to take a couple weeks to get yours fixed. But I just went on this website and I got you a new one and it's running. What's running already? Yeah, it's running already. And by the way, it's going to be like a lot faster than yours. Oh, and when you're at your various offices, because you're all over the place, you can, it'll actually be faster because it's sitting up on DigitalOcean's tier one bandwidth. And, you can get server stats right here. You log into this little web console. Even if you don't know anything about servers, even if you don't know anything about technology, their dashboard, the information that they have presented right there makes it real easy to say, this is how much data, this is how much transfer we've used, this is how much disk space we have, this is how much memory we've used. Absolutely outstanding. DigitalOcean, and use the promo code Here's the Thing, and get $10 off your first Linux rig for free.
Every day, every single day, there's something that comes up every day. Yeah. Every day. And it's been like that since May.
Yeah, you reach a point, dude. You reach a point, and I was at this point. I got to this point around Tuesday or Wednesday. I just started turning my phone off. I take my phone, I turn it off.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I am. Because I can't. I just, you know, the thing is, and it's one of those things. I'm pretty good at just ignoring it. You know, but after a certain amount of time, and people have gotten to this step now. This is a real irritation for me. People have figured out that when I'm busy, I just ignore their messages. So now they've gotten into the habit of first they send me a message. When I don't answer it, then they send me a lot of messages because that will get me to answer. And I'll say...
I'm sorry, no.
No, yeah, you do. But you actually have important things when you do it. So, and I'd say 50% of the time, I do. I pick up the phone because I'm like, it must be that important. And then I respond or whatever. And now it's gotten to the point that not only will they spam me 50 messages or whatever, then when that doesn't work, then they start calling. And then when I don't answer, then they call again. And I just don't want to listen to my phone ring that many times. So I just turn it off. And I'm like, you know what? I'll do it later.
Hallelujah, brother. Hallelujah. I've been having a real problem with it. A weekend ago, I told Rikai, I said, Rikai, I'm going to put my phone on D&D. I just want to spend this weekend with my kids.
Don't tell a secret, Chris, because then other people start doing it.
But it's such an ironic story. You see, and I can't say it on air because.
No, leave out the way that I contact you.
Okay. All right. And names. So Rikai has a secret backdoor to me that we've set up that even if I shut off most of my communication methods, he can still get a hold of me in case there's a JB emergency. And so I said, you know, use the secret backdoor communication line that we set up just for this purpose, and I'll be AFK for the weekend. I'm going to put my devices on D&D. I just want to spend the weekend with my kids. And it worked out pretty great. In fact, he did have to use the secret backdoor communication. And they're for something minor. I mean, it wasn't like it just took a moment of my time. It wasn't a big deal for me to just answer it really quickly. And I'm like, this is working great. Like, I'm not getting swept up into a whole bunch of stuff, and like, but the really important stuff still getting taken care of. And it's about 8 o'clock at night, and I've almost made it the entire day when I get a message on my Echo. And because the Echo app on my phone is not a messaging app, it doesn't follow the same D&D rules. So push notifications can come through, light up my device, vibrate my device, but also, very helpfully so, all of my Echoes light up bright green, which, of course, was next to where Dylan was sleeping, and oh, so no. It flashed bright green all night in Dylan's face. And my phone got notifications. But I did get to test the new Echo chat features, which was, so at least there's another device now that has notifications and messages. And it was just kind of ironic because I'd built up like this super like sophisticated, like we went out of our way to establish back channel communications. I D&D'd everything. And then right as I'm about to go to bed, well, at least, you know, sit down and watch TV for the night, this thing hits me in the face.
Did you try Alexa mute?
Cancel. Well, so the thing just flashes until you play the message. You can play the message back like on your phone.
I thought it muted visual notifications as well.
Well, I had it muted and it was still lit up green. So I don't know.
Well, that's lame.
I mean, it wasn't. Yeah, but it's hard for me to test exactly because I got several messages, and so I had it on and off at one point and replied to them, so I don't know for sure. I'd have to try it again. But I just thought that was pretty funny that I had gone through all this effort, like, because of exactly what Noah was just saying, and that still happened. I'm like, okay, all right.
It's almost like you're surrounding yourself in internet-connected devices, Chris.